Good evening, and welcome to the Yellow Dogs. Tonight, I'd like to begin with a quote from one of our very, very, very first teachers, Ram Dass. He says, "It is as if we are born into spacesuits that allow us to function on this plane. We spend many years learning how to operate the suit, and the superstructure of the suit is the ego. Most people forget that they were born into this suit, that they are not actually the suit." Ram Dass was the one that said, "Go meditate. Go learn to meditate." Eckhart Tolle, another one of our teachers who we've been listening to lately, says that we're all the time creating a self, an ego, and it's all coming from the thinking mind. So these psychological concepts create this sense of me, the ego. So, is that true? Well, that's what we are really engaged in, because Buddha says we have to find out for ourselves. So in our practice, we want to know when we're operating from the ego, which nothing's wrong with the ego and the mind, we know. They just have to be known. So we just want to know the ego in a way where we know when we're creating this self. So we do kind of go in and out of this, but we're probably not noticing the process. So when we begin to set an intention to get to know this part that's within the mind and body, we begin to see the difference. So when we're selfing, and that's a term that you'll hear a lot in this practice, selfing, or just being. Selfing or just being. And so this sense of self comes from our minds, and we've created it along the way without questioning. Who am I really then if I'm not this sense of self, because I have a deep sense of self? But that's where our journey begins. We are setting up the question of the universe, and we're opening to that possibility. So that's a huge step in our practice. Who am I really? And so the journey begins, and here we go. Jack Kornfield, another teacher, says we're a paradox. We're living within two perspectives. Two parallels of spiritual quest. No self, you hear that too, no self led by the heart or spaciousness. And we touch that in our meditation practice. And this healthy sense of self that's led by the mind is to be acknowledged and known. Because this sense of self is true, we know that. No. What we do know is it's real. but it's not true. And it's fleeting because this sense of ego will go when the body goes. It will end for all of us, the end. And really, in the deepest, deepest sense, the self doesn't exist. But as you well know, human language isn't very good at describing reality at the deepest level. So we talk about, interact as an I, me, he, she, they, as a person. So this sense of self, a me, arises each time we identify with our body, in our sensations, in our feelings. Identify with them. Setting ourselves up in believing in them instead of just letting them arise and fall away. Because that's the nature of we see, we hear, we feel, we taste, we hear, we do something else, we think. What else?
Smell.
We smell, thank you.
Some more than others.
Stephen said more, some of us more than others. So we can see why we would identify that that's us. And so we begin to see them, these processes, these senses, in a whole different way. That's what meditation is we're diving in to see if what the Buddha says is true. And so this process of looking at clearly of how this spaceship operates, it supports us when we're living in this relative truth, because we live in the relative truth and the ultimate truth, and we touch both, and both are important, so we don't want to disregard either one. We want to heal this sense of self without feeding the delusion of the self. That's major. We want to heal this sense of self without feeding the delusion that that's who we are. So we do this with working with humility. Humility, it's an unconditional friendship and acceptance towards ourselves. And that's a huge one for us, because we have deep, 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 deep conditioning of not treating ourselves very nicely. We're not respecting ourselves. But one of the things that the teachings keep driving home for us is there is some nobility if we open to it as being human beings, taking steps towards finding out who we are when we stop being a human being. And so this is not optional, Buddha says. It is a necessary prerequisite to knowing who we are. Liking ourselves, accepting ourselves, loving ourselves, being kind to ourselves, acknowledging that we're perfectly imperfect, allow ourselves to be human. And that's a big, huge step, but it's a must. So it takes humility to sit and allow the process of spiritual ripening to occur. We know that it's not easy. It's simple, but it's not easy to be quiet and still, because again, we're not conditioned to do that. So our sense of self, this ego, is just a set of thoughts that we've accumulated along the way. Oh, that sounds like a good self in thought. I'll keep that around and remind me that may be who I am. It's just a set of thoughts that we've accumulated along the way, and we begin to believe them. And we create this sense of self and define it in a very tight space. How sad. I'm feeling really sorry for myself right now. But it's like a familiar room built of thoughts. So what if? What if we open to the possibility that we are more? And that's what we're all about here at the Yellow Dogs. That's our journey. We see the world through this window of who we think we are. And we get really secure in feeling that way. Really, real secure, where we don't, it's not easy to step out of that. We're afraid to venture outside because it's scary. And so as a result, it's become a prison. And that's why we can understand when Rumi says, why do you stay in prison when the door is so wide open? So our egos have conned us. And that's why it's really important to get to know it. Oh, hello, ego. I see you. I know you when you arise, and that's okay. Welcome. I know about you. I'm not afraid of you. But I do want to get to know you, because there's freedom with that knowledge, with that wisdom. So we believe we need its specific thoughts to survive. And so we're completely controlled through our fear of loss of identity. So to give up these thoughts, it seems, would annihilate us. So we cling to them. Actually, we just don't know. You know, we just don't know what it's all about until we slow down and we open our hearts to find out. When we open for the truth. And it's amazing what happens when we put that out there. So there is an alternative, as we know. We needn't destroy the ego to escape its tyranny, because it's here and it's going to be here. We're going to be living with it, whether we want to or not. But we need to know what the ego is and see for ourselves. And that's the practice we do throughout each day, how we define ourselves. That's the practice, is opening up to that. Oh, okay, so someone told me to find my ego. So once we know this, we have the power to change it, to shift it. From prison to home. Now, where's home? Present moment. And the more we teach present moment, it becomes more and more homey. Have you noticed? So when we are meditating, that's what we're welcoming. We're welcoming that part of us at this particular time on the planet that is spacious. We felt it. We know it. And the being quiet and still and looking within enables us to touch those places. Now, we've touched them before throughout our lives. At times where we forget that we even have a mind and a body, and we're just in the present moment with something absolutely magical. And boy, when he drives itself, he gets to look too. But not for long. So present moment living is home. We've just been away from it too long. And we do this out of respect for the nobility of being an ordinary human with all its frailties. And we're just taking steps towards realizing it. It's courageous. Because we do create a personalities of likes and dislikes, and nothing's wrong with that either. Because we also know in the teachings that it says that is our very quick touching of what's happening in the present moment when we are seeing and hearing and smelling and tasting, then we automatically come up with, oh, pleasant, unpleasant, or not. But it's at that beginning, that point, where we create the suffering. Because what do we do with it? Well, we do a lot of things with it. And we keep it going, keep the mind creating all kinds of dogma about the like or the dislike or not being interested. But it's at that door that we want to be really awake to. And that takes a pause. And that's what our practice does. It, you know, everything, it's real hard even for me today. What happens if we don't have to strive to do any of these things? Because if we practice what the Buddha has found, that's quite natural, it unfolds naturally. That's why you can't strive and push it. It's releasing, letting go, not thinking we're the center of the universe. And so we keep going on this train of thoughts with our preferences until somebody says, wait a minute, just look at it, see what happens. This is if that's possible. So there is an evolutionary occurrence in all of us, whether we know it or not. And so we have this relationship with our six senses, and of course we include thinking in that. And that's important because in this suit, that's how we're perceiving our life. That's it. That's what we've been given. And so we automatically like and not like, or not interested, and get caught up in our personal preferences. How dare you, universe? How dare you, you know, when things don't go our way? Instead of bowing to it, we just, well, I don't know about you, but there's this anger, you know. Why am I not getting my way? So when we grab hold of our personal preferences and start adding thoughts, and we just spin a story, it's a natural phenomena. So nothing's wrong with it. Again, we have to keep reminding ourselves, we just want to know about it. That's it. We just want to know about it. And being with it, it takes care of itself. Nature unfolds naturally within you, within all of us. So we don't have to strive to meditate. We can just meditate, because then we're getting to know all the things that we've been given in the spacesuit and exactly how to live with it, because we find already with just a little taste, there's more freedom and happiness in just a little bit of what we've tasted in this practice. It happens quite quickly. But we have been trained to look at the ego building. But we've also been trained with the acronym RAIN. And this goes for all the phenomena that we are dealing with constantly. We can recognize, be in the present moment, to recognize what's actually going on within. And we can allow it. And we then, when we get that far, we become interested, because we begin to see for ourselves, oh yeah, it's not, things are not as they appear. So how do we touch it? Well, we practice. It's in stillness. Could stillness be that? Yeah, it could be. Of course, we come from the culture of busyness. And that's okay, because we're going to see that we've already seen the big, huge difference in being busy and being quiet and still. So existing in two worlds, in a relative truth, with these minds and bodies, in the ultimate truth that we seek within these minds and bodies, there is who we really are. So on our basic molecular level, the cells in our bodies are always changing. You're not the person, nor am I the person I was a minute ago. All the cells die off and want new ones generate. Well, we can't see that. But that's the truth of nature. That's what actually is happening. And so the practice points us, helps us set some intentions to begin to see that we are precious. And we are learning how to honor being a human being, because we're beginning to understand what it is and what it's like to be a human being, because we're looking at all of it in very, very, very quiet and sharp way. So with that, I'm going to stop. And we'll ask Randy to come over, and then we'll open it up to you. Thank you.